Welcome to the Work Dynamics Podcast, your source for information related to modern business workflows. I am your host, Scott Williams, along with my co-host, Grant Bafulci. Grant, are you ready to get into it today?
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Today's topic, the never-ending security struggle, controlling content access to keep businesses safe. Grant, this is obviously something that affects every type of organization. When it comes to security and knowing, you know, where your files are, who has access, those kind of things, it's terrifying in this day and age. I have a question for you. I mean, you know the space really well from a, I'll call it external, call it document hosting. So, you know, things like SharePoint, things like OpenText. Let's get into that first, let me ask this. Why are those platforms for storage so trusted in kind of the greater business ecosystem? Because what I also want to do is after this, just for the listeners as well, is that we're going to start comparing this to, I'll call it point solution cloud scenarios like Dropbox and Google Docs and all the scary ones out there. So let's start there. I mean, give me some insight on the hardened enterprise aspect, I will say, of some of, you know, something like SharePoint or OpenText and those types of solutions.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I think that those applications, first of all, those companies that have those softwares spend a great deal of time and effort to make sure that their platforms are secure. And so that's very helpful and comforting to an organization, as you said. The issue is not so much how comforting they are in my understanding of it, but it's really draws more to the fact that other opportunities to do the same thing are really insecure. And so a lot of clients in the past, people out of their organizations, have been using things like their C drive, Excel spreadsheets, Word to pass documents back and forth. And really, there's no way in those platforms, in those specific platforms, to manage any security layers around the documents that are moving throughout your organization. One, they're more difficult to find. Two, you're not sure of the versions that are there. And three, there's no restriction on what sort of document you can pass to whomever. So if you email a document out and you happen to put the wrong email address, that document goes out the door. And so when you start to put in platforms like SharePoint or the content server application from OpenText, it then becomes somewhat restrictive. You can manipulate access to documents. You can control who sees them and when, the versions of the document, so on and so forth. And so the next aspect to that is how do other applications that work with those applications from a repository perspective make sure that they don't override or mess up the security framework that is within those applications. That's a very important detail.
You said something that struck me is you know, a part of security that perhaps people don't I will say often consider, because, and when we say security today, it's like, obviously, like, you know, there's complete other topics around like hardened cybersecurity initiatives and those kind of things where it's, you know, security posturing and offensive versus defensive cybersecurity, that stuff. That's not what we're talking about today. And I just want to make sure the listeners realize that this is more the idea of the ensuring that you're living within a space that is secure in how your data can be managed, shared, tracked, as you said. And one of the things that even from a security perspective, and I'm going to put up, you know, a kind of a date stamp, I guess, on this podcast and the time in which it was being done. We saw just a few weeks ago an error that came out of the Canadian federal government about the vaccine passport exemption stuff for truckers going across the border. And there was confusion in the news where it was released that the federal government had lifted measures. Everybody, you know, whatever your political leaders were, don't care. That's just like the message was they had been lifted. 24 hours later, they came out and had to apologize in the press saying, sorry, there was a miscommunication. And it read as if somebody had got the wrong memo, the wrong version of a memo, those kind of things, released it, misunderstanding what the message was, and then had to retract that and then come back and say, no, actually, in fact, the measures are still in place and it will remain in place and for however long. So going back to what you said, right, is that like even versioning control, when you talk about security, there's also just the security of messaging that can impact, I would call it, you know, brand even in that sense, like the federal government in Canada having to go, hey, sorry, we kind of messed up and somebody didn't have the right version of the memo and we released something inadvertently that we shouldn't have. How often do you, in your experience, even see that? Because I know that like one of the things that the Work Dynamics platform is like, I'll call it famous for, literally, is the idea of, you know, correspondence management and ensuring like, you know, being able to see every single version of something back in time and tracking changes and those kinds of things. Tell me a horror story or horror stories perhaps that you've seen where versioning control is terrifying unto itself that can lead to, call it security adjacent type of risks like for the one that I just described.
Yeah, I mean, I won't get into to specifics on any.
Change the names to hide the guilty.
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, including myself. So, but you know, the problem that you have with versioning control and those types of things with respect to the security aspect is that every document, every policy, every position, especially at the political level, is a living and breathing environment. And so perspectives change. As the world evolves, regulations have to change. Opinions change. Governments change. And so while it's a lot easier to manage what happens from government to government with respect to position, you can appreciate that if a minister's office takes a document, takes a policy, and evolves that policy over time, and somehow the previous policy is the one that gets released, the first thing that happens is that the opposition says, hey, last week you said this. This week you're saying this. Next week you are going to say the one that you said last week again. And so we're really confused. And so that leads to a great amount of mistrust. It opens a crack for the opposition to really get in and start kind of challenging the government's perspective and what they really believe. And so that's a very important piece. And so we have to make sure that the proper version as it evolves is the one that comes to light. And the second part to that is that those documents are very seldom written by one person and maintained by one person. And so if I go in and create a document and you take a look at it and you say, well, you know what, from my perspective, we need to make some edits here, and that document is now changed and signed by the minister, if my version of the document gets out in some capacity, which is two versions old, it may not reflect the actual stance of what the minister signed, but it looks like a policy document that came out. And so that, again, in itself could be fraught with, you know, a lot of misinterpretation. And so there's a great deal of emphasis put on finalizing a document, and that document is the one that has to be releasable. And the previous versions are really one man's opinion versus a collective. And so those documents, if they do get out, if they're breached in any way as to the original position versus the actual position, that can get a lot of people in trouble pretty quick.
Well, and even, you know, again, to kind of date stamp this podcast, one of the things we just saw in the news yesterday was that they literally said it was human error, but a file was emailed out that had very, very, call it secretive information about military misconduct with certain individuals and, you know, those kind of things. And you had even mentioned that, right? It's the, like, human error is is human error. Like, no one's pointing fingers and blaming anybody for that, because God knows it happens. I mean, we've all done it where it's, you know, it's like, how many Jasons do you know in your, you know, in your world? And you start typing the word Jason, you just assume it's going to be their email address, and you hit something out and it's, oh, went to a different Jason. That can happen. But again, it's like, when we look at document management platforms for what they are there to ensure that that doesn't happen. It eliminates a lot more of that risk scenario, because it's, you know, you're sharing, even from an external perspective, inside a platform that manages those kind of things. Here's the next topic down this road, Grant, is that, you know, we talked about, you know, some of, like, the bigger document repository platforms, I will call it. So one of the things that continues, I know that, at least in my world, and talking to even a lot of my friends that are CTOs, CIOs, you know, chief security officers, those kind of compliance, all those kinds of things, is that, you know, whatever the term you use, I've heard rogue IT, shadow IT, you know, there's probably 100 terms for this, but it really comes down to the idea of this. I'm a person that sits inside a company, and I don't personally like the workflow and or IT infrastructure that I've been handed. It's cumbersome, sometimes weird, sometimes too involved, I will call it, to share documents or to access documents from my home office. You know, I think anybody working in enterprise or government has, I'm sure, thought the exact same thing at times. I know for some of the very large companies that I've worked in, I am guilty of this even 20 years ago, and having to, you know, okay, I got to work on stuff at home tonight, but I can't get it to me. Do I email it to my, you know, private home email address? Do I take it home on a USB key? So now if you look at that, you know, fast forward 20 plus years, now you get into this idea of the cloud. And the cloud has far too much leeway for people to, I will call it, you know, work outside of the confines of corporate infrastructure. The horror stories that I hear are people, you know, I'm sick of IT telling me where I can and cannot store my stuff or how I get to it at home. So I took my own personal credit card, spent $10 a month on something like Dropbox, and now I'm just uploading corporate documents into Dropbox so I can grab them at home and work on them at night. Yeah, no ill intent in many ways from even, say, like a pure security scenario, but what it means is that you now have corporate documents that are outside of the view of IT and compliance and security from that side of things, and things can go missing and things can change and versioning again. What are some of the things that you've come across, like, from a, and let's tie it to this, like, I'll say the, like, who has access to what? When we're talking about cloud platforms like that, like Google Docs or Dropbox or, you know, any of them, the, you know, how to send massive files through the internet for, you know, for free, there's you know, the platforms are endless. What is your experience been in around that, as far as the, like, let's talk about access, because I think that's really important, right? Who has access to what?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because what you were talking about there with respect to, you know, your own personal experience and saying, look, this is cumbersome the way I'm doing this, and I'm going to try and find another way to get through it, or I'm going to use another platform, like a Dropbox, like you said. The interesting thing is that it really comes down to someone's perspective, and I'm kind of getting away from your question, but this, it comes down to someone's perspective on what's important from a security perspective. Like, I look at it and say, okay, what do I not want to show anybody in my own personal stuff? Well, I'd rather not give them my bank account number. But do I care if they see a different kind of form or a different bit of information? And what happens is your security folks will say, well, this is really important. This is something that we can't share. This is this could be devastating if we release this. But the person who's actually looking at the document goes, well, who cares? It's not a big deal. And it may be a big deal and it may not be a big deal, but my perspective is it's not. So I'm going to circumvent the process by emailing it to myself so I can work in it at home. And I see no flaw in that. And I see no reason that this is so secure that it's important. But the next person might have a completely different perspective, right? And so, you know, there's the guys that walk around who say, I don't want a template. I don't want anything out there because I want to make sure no one has anything. There is no footprint out there of me. And there are other people that just say, like, as long as my PIN number is protected, everything else, who cares? Mm-hmm. And so people share stuff. They don't think it's an issue. They've never been kind of bitten by it. And they look at it and say the risk is low. It's low until your identity gets stolen. And all of a sudden, you have a different kind of issue altogether, and you don't really realize how bad things can go when you put information out there that shouldn't be out there. And so corporate policy says this. There's a reason why they establish those policies, because they believe that there is a security level. They try and put an application or a platform in place to make sure that those are adhered to. And people don't see the same value or don't recognize the same level of importance around it. And they try and circumvent it. And that can really cause some challenges. It's funny because the organization suffers if that happens, and the person suffers, but they don't really realize the ramifications of how that would go. And so there can be some real challenges around trying to make sure that those things are in place. And it could be, it happened to me last week too. I not so much that I emailed the wrong Jason, I emailed to a personal address, as opposed to I have a person's personal address and I have a work address. And without, you know, everybody gets busy, and in the course of trying to send some documents, I ended up sending it to their Gmail account and asked them after if they had the document I sent, and they were like, no, didn't get it yet, and I'm going to resend it. And then we realized that it actually just went to the wrong email address. So completely simple mistake. It wasn't conscious. One of those brainless things. And next thing I know, that could have been the wrong person, but it could have been much worse. In this case, it wasn't anything that important. So it worked out.
And it also tracks back to the concept of corporate visibility, right? Like suddenly that document is outside of the view of, you know, the ever-present omnipotent IT gods.
Yeah.
So,
well, I mean, we've all caused
blood pressure to go up.
Yeah. We've all heard the story, right? Where someone says something negative about something in the company, and by the way, you just hit reply all as opposed to reply, right? And
yep. So,
you know, everybody in the organization is getting your dirty laundry, and yep. and what, you know, everybody's retract, right? Yep. Recall that message. Uh-oh. That's a yep. problem.
But when it goes outside of the organization, you can't retract it.
That's right.
Right. So, well, let's talk about that, because one of the things that this kind of feeds into as well. So it's like, I get the, you know, I mean, going back to just even like the Dropbox thing, those kind of things, there's a greater picture in and around this. You know, we've talked about the frustration perhaps that sometimes when this, you know, a cumbersome solution is put in place that often doesn't, you know, call it, take into consideration the human factor of workflow. And in fact, like, you know, one of the articles that were just posted through Work Dynamics just this past week was on the idea of auditing workflow and kind of taking into consideration that human factor of how people interact. I think if you don't take that into consideration, that is also what breeds that shadow IT scenario, because it's, you know, it's that old adage of there's a scenario where it has to breed ingenuity, right? Where it's like, okay, like I have to come up with a solution to this because it's not working for me. And that breeding ingenuity scenario is always the, you know, the road to Three Mile Island was paved with good intentions, right? It's like, I just wanted to share something to myself at home to work on it, email it to myself, whatever it may be, but it's the, you know, the ingenuity that was applied in coming up with a shadow IT scenario suddenly is, you know, this stuff is kind of pushed outside of the organization again. When it comes to access, let's talk about this, because this is something that has obviously impacted everybody over the last 22 months. You know, as of the, you know, we're looking at kind of like the first week of February 2022 at this point. Everybody's been living through a global pandemic for, you know, going almost 2 years now. So with that kind of 2 year anniversary coming up, we saw so many people being moved home to work from home. And one of the biggest issues of the day, and even still today, I think people are starting to right size this, but it's, this stuff does not happen overnight, like any kind of solution. And it's, you know, the secure access and to not just content and not just documentation, but secure access to tools to do your job and the workflows that pertain to it and those types of things. In the early days from, you know, say March 2020, Grant, to now, and let's wrap this around, say, just even the Work Dynamics platform itself, because it's obviously it enables access from, you know, alternate location stuff. What were some of the pitfalls that people were looking to solve, you know, from that side of things? Like, what were their worries at the beginning of the pandemic from access to files, folders, software, workflows, those types of things? And how do you see it progressing over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's lots of tools out there that allow for, you know, someone to VPN in from wherever. There's firewalls in place for the most part that can restrict things. But, you know, the problem is, at least in the initialization of this, is that you have, as a government organization, they are typically very tight. For the most part, they've got their security down pat. But it's within their own house, right? And so they have an environment. They've controlled their environment. They're very good at controlling their environment. They're very good at managing it for the most part with years and years and years of experience. And then all of a sudden, at the flip of a coin, they are now encompassing what is happening at Scott's house. What provider is he using? Where is he? Is all of a sudden Scott within the framework of what we have control of or not? There was a consultant, I believe, that was working for the government that decided to go on a trip. He was still working for the government, the same as if he had dialed in from home, but he went offshore on a trip, and they found out about it, and that was a real problem. Not because there had anything changed other than the location, the geography of where he now was, didn't have the same level of security on their network. And mm-hmm. So there's a provision for something, somebody, some piece of software to somehow mine into the transfer. And so that's really an issue across the board when they can control a space and then it all of a sudden becomes a space that's so much more expansive. And then, you know, not everybody has the same level of restriction that we may have here in Canada. So a government employee working for the government, connecting to their network, for the most part, we have levels of security that are in there. But when you get outside of the country, the world can be a scary place, right? And they don't have the same levels of security. They don't have the same access to making sure that things aren't hacked or that things aren't cut in. And of course, we all know that there is a real concern about us being kind of attacked and snooped on already from certain countries around the world. Mm-hmm. that have caused Canada and the U.S. great concern from a security perspective. So it's one thing to manage inside of your own fence around your house. It's a whole other thing to manage at the outside. And I think the expression you were going to use earlier was necessity being the mother of invention. And that is exactly what they've had to do. And I think they've done a pretty incredible job, to be quite frank, to saying, okay, you used to be in the office. Now you're outside of the office connecting in from some other environment that we don't really control. It's a more a public environment. And we're going to allow you access through things like VPNs and whatever else it may be to log in. But you know, there's a real differentiation there in some capacity because a lot of the organizations have different levels of security too, right? So it's it's one thing to say, hey, you know, and I'm not trying to pick on an organization, but there's one thing to manage a you know, non-protected B information or information that's just correspondence back and forth to, you know, one of the ministers. A whole different animal to connect into CSE or CSIS, one of those really private organizations that has very, very secure levels of communication that has to be very, very protected. And so I'm not even sure how they circumvent that. I'm sure that there's a lot of organizations that haven't been able to circumvent that working from home scenario, and that a lot of those folks are still kind of mandated to go in.
Well, I think also, you know, we've been picking on government today, but let's also look at private enterprise because it's very much the same thing. I mean, you know, there's been, you know, for years now, and like, you know, what we see across that, you know, kind of market space is that how many times has, and like, you know, I like that, like you mentioned, like the offshore thing. From an enterprise side of things, let's just look at the, for years now, call it the mobile salesperson, the road warrior, the on a plane every, you know, 24 hours going to a different country. It's connecting to, you know, corporate content through internet cafes or just, you know, cafes in general that have internet, you know, could be a Starbucks, could be anything. And trust me when I say, like, some of the really scary cybersecurity folks that I know that do penetration testing and those kind of things, they love those places. They just laugh. They can have access. Anybody that connects to those kind of networks, I've literally seen in real time people go, here, watch, I'll have access to every file on everybody's laptop right now sitting in Starbucks. Give me 30 seconds and they're in. And it's that easy. You know, so it's like on that side as well, we have that access point of where are you in the world? You could be, you know, somebody working in the legal department at a big insurance company, and you have to travel across the world for a meeting with a team of people in an office in Germany. And, you know, you're connecting at the airport, you're connecting at from a cafe or a restaurant, your hotel room, wherever that may be, and or even tethering to your phone of all things. And even that adds then a separate security layer, as you were saying, like that changes the dynamic. I think lastly, like one of the things, like when it comes to access, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this, is that I think a lot of the times this is the easy one, right? It's like, how do you receive information, send information? You know, it's, if you can control the number of, you know, kind of access points within that, it starts to make it easier to avoid things like malware, ransomware, those kind of things. But that comes down to more, again, the cybersecurity side. It's not about just even like the access in general, but let's talk about like level of access, because you mentioned some of the, you know, the scarier, more clandestine government stuff. Same thing with enterprise, right? It's like I mentioned, you know, legal counsel within a government, within an enterprise organization, or the C-suite is going to have different access, I would think, than someone working in the call center or someone working in marketing or, you know, even a, you know, lower level finance person. What do you see as far as the concerns in this day and age, especially where we sit now in 2022 with just the amount of data being created every day and all those types of things, of how important is controlling access on the level in which they sit within an organization. So whether that's C-suite within, you know, legal, I said, an enterprise level, or in the government level, whether it's ministers or the U.S., you know, congressmen, whatever it may be.
Yeah, that's a good that's a good question. I think it's extremely important, right? There is, as you said, so much data and content being created. And it gets easy to slip up. It gets easy to make something available to somebody who shouldn't necessarily see it. And the government, and just in the government perspective, defines it as protected information. So protected B information or protected C information or levels of security. And then they have different levels of security within. So they have what they classify as, and it's not secret, but they call it secret level networks in some places. Mm-hmm. And then there's top secret information, which is actually still kept on paper. And they use systems sometimes to track the location of a document that actually sits in a safe in a physical paper-based file system. But when it becomes important to look at that document, they have to make sure they understand where that document is and which safe it's in. And so they actually do it that way. It's really interesting. I was talking to somebody at a government level, but I'm sure it happens at the private sector level. It makes me think of James Bond, but there are still a great number of what they called handheld couriers that travel around with a briefcase with a handcuff and a chain to their briefcase, and they get on a plane and fly from place to place because they're not comfortable that whatever location they're in from a global perspective, that information is protected to send any other way than mm-hmm. to have someone throw it into a briefcase, lock it up, chain it to their arm, and fly there. And so they're still doing that. You don't see it very often, but every once in a while you'll see somebody in Ottawa with a chain around their hand and mm-hmm. carrying a briefcase, and that is still a practice. But, you know, that's very distinct levels of information. You know, it's I guess I kind of look at how much information are you prepared, and whether that's in your own household, in your own business, how much are you prepared to share with the world, right? the basic outlook that you want to provide, the basic opinions, the basic conversations, not that important really to keep privatized. But there are legal ramifications, there are security ramifications, there are knowledge espionage type communications that you have to keep secret. And if you tell everybody what your secret sauce is, then you have a problem because there are, from a whistleblower perspective, all the way to people that just don't think it's that important to keep. A good example is Coca-Cola. I'm not sure exactly how many people know the secret ingredients in the Coca-Cola product, but it's not very many. And they don't let them fly on the same plane. And there's a whole bunch of security measures they've taken in place to make sure that their ingredients are what they are so that no one can replicate their taste. And that happens everywhere. Every organization has something that is proprietary to them, whether it be high tech, whether it be food manufacturing, whether it be government. They have high tech ways of trying to keep their what is proprietary to them secret. And so the more that you open that up, the more that you allow people to have access to it, the more that you don't restrict that file access, you run the risk that some of that might get leaked out. And so I think it's very, very important to if you're keeping documents that are important that you consider corporate documents, I think it's very, very important to make sure that you're allowing the people that need to have access to it, access to it, the people that need momentary access to it, the occasional access to it, and the people that don't need to see it probably shouldn't see it.
Last question. Anyone with that handcuff on the wrist, were they driving an Aston Martin?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think it would be pretty difficult to drive an Aston Martin with the handcuffs unless you are qualified like a 00 whatever. So, when I've seen it, it's been on a plane, and they're not flying it, fortunately.
All right. I'm still going to envision the Aston Martin.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, Grant, as always, thank you so much for your time today, and thanks to the listening audience. If you have any questions regarding anything that we discussed today from the concept of that struggling with never-ending security and access to information, visit us at workdynamics.com. Check out the Work Dynamics platform because it solves, you know, the majority of the things that we were talking about today, whether it's making sure that there isn't shadow IT, making sure that you can assign access at specific levels, and kind of avoiding all things clandestine and people, you know, kind of sneaking documents around when they shouldn't be, absolutely can solve it. So, Grant, thank you very much as always, and thanks to the listening audience. Till the next time.
Thanks, Scott.